It's not big, is it? It's like darts.
Well, this is awkward. my name's Kelly and I'm an addict.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I'm surprisingly nervous. Faces are changing throughout my recovery, and there's people I know and people I don't know, and my head's telling me that I've got to give everyone a message, like they've got to take something from this that is going to be, like, good. And, fucking hell, sorry.
There you go, nothing like a tumble dryer to disrupt it.
Thanks, Daniel. Let's start again, shall we? My story hasn't changed since the day I walked in here, but what has happened is I've gained more experience about what we do here and practicing the principles we learn here into my daily life. Again, my head can tell me that I don't work a program and I don't know what I'm talking about and I don't know why I'm still around, but I am. So, my using, I'll just give like a brief. My using was just like, you hear a lot in the rooms, like, go hard or go home. Jails, homelessness, lost everything that ever meant anything to me. And took me to some really dark places, but ultimately inside, the darkest place that I've ever known, and that's what kind of brought me to my knees. I didn't have this sudden kind of thought like, oh, let's go into NA and they might be able to help me. That wasn't how it happened. But I got to the point where I didn't know what to do anymore. And to me, that was my surrender. I didn't know what to do anymore. What I was trying to do weren't working. Going to drug and alcohol services, going to probation officers, standing up in courts, losing my kids, family not talking to me, was never enough to stop me using. In fact, that stuff just made me want to use even more. I came out of jail after quite a lengthy sentence, one that was bigger than any of the others that I'd done before. And I said, I'm never going to go back on recall. And then I got recalled twice. And I went back to where I was living before I came to London. And I made the decision to come to London because London had to have a better opportunity to get clean than where I was before. So I got on a coach and I came to London and I slept my first night in St James's Park and I glorified it. Like, I slept in the Queen's back garden for the first night in London and it was like a nightmare. I was clucking and really vulnerable. And I was sleeping around the corner outside Prep for about a week. And I came looking for some hot water and asked connections on the buzzer. And there's a man standing in this meeting tonight who was standing on the doorstep at the time, and he said to me, we can't fill your flask up with hot water, but if you like want a coffee in an hour off the street, you're welcome to join us. And I walked down them stairs into this meeting and see yous lovely lot. And I couldn't believe that like yous lot were a bunch of addicts. Like yous hadn't used like me. I was like 6.5 stone of a shell. That's all I consisted of. And just women at the end of the meeting came up to me, and including my best friend today, and gave me their numbers and reached out to me and gave me food and gave me, I got a basic text and a Just For Today and a CD, even though I was living on the street. I had a BlackBerry phone, and I remember a lady from the meeting rang me up the next day, and I had to hold the earpiece together so I could hear what she was saying. That's where my using took me. And I don't remember what I heard in the meeting. I just remember feeling some kind of love and something like acceptance of no matter how I looked or I was living on the street, for Christ's sake, like it didn't matter. And then I got invited to another a meeting, my home group now, and I went to that meeting, and again the same thing. I walked in there and it was something I'd never felt before. I felt accepted and I felt at home. I felt like I belonged, and I hear that a lot in the rooms. And I went to a picnic, and a woman's picnic after that, and I remember walking away from the picnic that day, and there was about 20 women there, if not more. Some of them are still in my life today. And I remember walking away from that picnic, heading my way back here to Trafalgar Square with some sense of hope that things could get better. And I didn't know how that was going to work, but I just thought, well, like, I'm here. Someone made a phone call on my behalf to a treatment centre, and before I knew it, Monday morning, I was on my way down to the treatment centre having an assessment, and I got in. It was like a prominent question they asked me was, where are you going now? And I said, I've got nowhere else to go. And he said, he showed me to my room, and that was the start of my journey. Sitting here today, that feels like a hell of a long time ago. It was 2 years, 3 months ago. As I say, I picked up a key ring, white key ring at this meeting, and I've managed to stay around. But only by doing this stuff, only by listening to what's suggested by people that I've held close to my heart since I've come in these rooms. And even through the difficult times, that's when I need to be doing it more. I've had some experiences when I was sharing it, as I say, like through my active addiction, all I cared about was where the next fix was coming from, the next time I was going to be able to stick a pin in my groin. And I lost everything because of that. And I came, as I say, I went into treatment, and none of my family wanted to know me. The only time they ever got a phone call was to say that I was in jail and I needed a postal order sent in or some clothes. And I really got to that point where I didn't want to ring them when I was 30 days clean, because I didn't want to say, look, I'm 30 days clean, like, I'm all right. Because I'd done that for years and I was never all right. So I just showed them. I just put in the action and continued to show them. And through the course of doing that, I've got all of them back in my life today. My dad, even. I hadn't seen my dad had a relationship with my dad for like 15 years. And I went over in July and made an amends to him and was over there for my 2 year clean time. All these experiences, life's really shown me that I have no control over what's going to happen to me. I just roll with the punches. And as long as I don't pick up, I'll be all right and I'll get through it. I got back from this year's been one hell of a year for my 2 years, I'm telling you. Like, if you'd have told me what my life was going to be like when I first walked into this meeting, I would have told you to, like, F off. And even I'm sitting here now in disbelief of how I'm still sitting here. I came back from Ireland and seeing my dad, and I really valued my relationship with my mum. She'd brought me up as a single parent for most of my life, and I always put my dad on this pedestal, and they were both on my step four, like, massively. And I really learned from the relationship with my dad that actually I wasn't the person I was today because of my dad. I was the person I was today because of my mum. And this year was kind of my process of doing my amends. And I was sitting in a meeting end of July, August time, and I got, really? Wow.
I'm lying.
We're sitting in a meeting, last minute on Facebook, as you do, wasting a bit of time before the meeting starts, and my daughter had sent me a friend request. and I haven't seen her for 12 years. And I answered that friend request, I confirmed it, and then I had to put my phone in my bag and get on with the meeting. And for the whole meeting, I'm just sitting there thinking she's going to hate me, she's going to send me these messages that I don't know what she's going to say. And when I took my phone out of my bag at the end of the meeting, I'd had a text message saying, "Hi Mum, it's me." And in that, we've built a relationship only over the phone so far. She's in Southampton. But I found out today that I get to see her on the 9th of November. And that's only because I do this stuff, because I couldn't be there for her if I wasn't being there for me. And God giveth and God taketh away. I hate using that word, but it's very true. I found out this last couple of months. My daughter come back on the, I think it was the 17th of August, and then my mum passed away on the 20th. Really suddenly, unexpected. So not only did I have to step up and try and be a mum that I've not been since I was, 26? I've had to step up and be a daughter and a sister and a niece, all at the same time. And for an addict that was sleeping on a pavement outside Trafalgar Square, clucking a you-know-what's off, to be doing this stuff now is empowering, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been the hardest couple of months I've ever experienced in recovery, honestly. I've had my moment where I've turned into a bit of an arsehole. Excuse my language, sorry, Tone. But I've still been supported. No one's gone, "Do you know what, Kel? Like, I'm not accepting that," and pushed me away, because this fellowship has just shown me again, time after time after time, the nature of it, and that's unity. And it just, I'm blown away still, like, how this works. And all I've really done is, like, not picked up and done the suggestive things, gone to meetings, worked my steps, got a sponsor, and I've ended up here. And it's kind of pretty unbelievable. I got a job interview on Thursday as well. Never have I been for a process. I've had to been like revising for interview prep. I've never had to do anything like that. My only job interview was ringing up a pub and saying, like, you need bar staff. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, can you come for an interview? Yeah, of course I can. Got the job. There you go, start the next day. This is this is pretty heavy, what I'm doing at the moment. I can't fit 2 years, 3 months of recovery in 15 minutes. It's impossible. But experience now tells me that this stuff works. And as long as you're willing and desperate enough to do this stuff, then anyone can do it, I believe. So yeah, I think I'll shine it off there. Oh.